Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First, it's free. How much better does it get? Second, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Third, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever your audience is tuning in, your podcast will be there. Fourth, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Look at us. We have less than 100 listeners per episode, yet we still make money on ads. Granted, it's not a lot, but we still make money. And finally, it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm. That's Anchor, the thing you throw off your boat, .fm to get started.
Another edition of the JMU Sports News Podcast. I'm Bennett Conlin. I'm joined by Jack Fitzpatrick, and we've got a lot to talk about. The football team obviously lost to Sam Houston, and I'm going to have to attempt to stay reserved with my comments today.
Hey, you can go all out. I mean, it doesn't matter. If you want to let loose, let loose. After listening to the Sports Blog podcast, I'm glad that we're all kind of on the same page. I think we all have kind of similar feelings about it. But man, that was a game. We're also currently watching, we're both currently watching the JMU softball game. They're playing Delaware right now as we record. My double monitor is being extremely temperamental, probably because I dropped my computer last night, but I don't want to focus on that. So we might be just peeking off at times or making weird noises after a play or something that happens. But as softball tries to run rule, there goes my double monitor. There it goes.
There it goes. He's having real double monitor issues, folks. This is extreme first world problems.
It's extreme. And it's all my fault. I dropped my computer yesterday, and that's a real bummer. So instead, I'm going to rely on Bennett, who's statcasting it. And just because now my double monitor won't work, that's annoying. But with all that being said, as we watch JMU try and run rule Delaware, it looks like it. I mean, they obviously
start.
Struck out the top of the first, and then Kate Gordon leads off with a home run. Just Kate Gordon doing Kate Gordon things. Do you want to talk about the heartbreak that was Saturday?
Yeah, so this was an interesting one because you were reasonably locked into the game. You yes. tweeted the game for us. I was covering UVA. I think it was UVA women's tennis on Saturday. It was men and women, actually. They both played Saturday. So I'm kind of bouncing back and forth between the tennis courts in my apartment. So I saw a stretch at the beginning of the second quarter when JMU looked pretty good. People are wondering if I was the good luck charm, and then I go back to tennis and they end up falling apart. People are wondering. So I only saw bits and pieces. Then I did go back and rewatch most of the game, especially the key scoring points and all that stuff. But you were definitely more locked in. So I guess what was your emotional roller coaster of a day like?
My emotional roller coaster of a day is the same emotional roller coaster I'm having with my double monitor, which just came right back on.
We're at the Veterans Memorial Park.
Oh, God.
What did he call it that wasn't Veterans Memorial
Park? I don't know.
Kurt, what are we doing?
He might have said Eagle Field. So what was my – okay, we're past all of that. I'm locked in, ready to go. I can bring it for a full four quarters of a podcast, unlike JMU football, who only brought it for two quarters. It started really rough. I mean, it opens, and I was having flashbacks to the 2016 game when JMU blocks the punt, and like all of a sudden the momentum changes. And I was like, this is literally the game, but flipped. Like, holy crap, this might get ugly quick. The JMU's defense has the stand of a lifetime, not allowing a yard. Like, they're on the goal line. And so then you get excited, then they have like another three and out, and you're questioning everything that's ever happened. They're not really opening up the playbook. And then all of a sudden they open up the playbook, and the second quarter happens, and I think they scored 24 unanswered points. They're up 21 at half, and they just look like world beaters. They look like the much, much, much better team. Casey Keeler has some funny comments at halftime. One of his things was, I didn't hear the PhD comment, but one of his comments was, well, first we just got to score, and then, you know, we got to score again. And then if we do that, we're just 7 points behind. And it's like, thanks, Casey. Yes, that is how a 21-point deficit does work. And then from there, the wheels fell off. It was an emotional high where you're just really loving every minute of it. Cole was looking good. The defense was looking great. We'll get into the special teams in a bit. And then it just fell apart, and you weren't watching. And I don't know how JMU fans were feeling at home watching it, but probably at the third quarter when they're down 7, as a fan, I knew JMU was going to lose. Like, you're watching this game and you're just like, there's no way JMU can pull this off. Like, the momentum has swung. And as much as Bennett, you've probably heard me talk about how momentum is a fake thing in football because of just the way it is. That game made me believe in momentum in football. Just everything that could go wrong went wrong for JMU. And then everything that could happen right. Like, every big play that Sam Houston needed to happen, happened. Every bad thing that Sam Houston needed JMU to do, happened. Like, it was absolutely insane. And I think the real backbreaker was the Cole Johnson interception.
That hurt.
Which wasn't his fault. I'll say that. It was not his fault. It went through the hands of Antoine Wells.
So a lot of things in the meltdown, right? The 5 minutes where they were outscored 28-0 at the end of the third quarter and into the fourth was fascinating. Because first you've got the windy kickoff. Well, not first, but there's 27-10.
It they starts with the 69-yard. The 69-yard touchdown to Jaquez Ezzard.
Yes. How you pronounce it. Yes.
It starts with that, and you're like, okay, that's annoying. And then, I mean, what happened from there?
The 80-yard punt return touchdown from the same dude.
Yes, and then
it's the kickoff.
Van Horst fumbles it because of the wind. And then they score on that drive, and that's 21 unanswered points, and they're right back in it. Well, no, there was a field goal in there by JMU.
I think it was 27-10, right? They're up 17, so it was 28 unanswered, I think, because then they scored the touchdown. Yeah. So, I mean, like, just insane. But then all of it was crazy. Like, the first touchdown, the dude's a really good player. Like, we had, what was it, Josh Criswell? That's his name, Huntsville Item sports editor. And that's the guy he said. He's like, if there's an X factor, it's this guy. Like,
he also predicted everything. He also said, I think this game is going to be like a 4-point game, and it's going to come down to either like a last second touchdown, or he might have said 3 points, but he said it's going to be a last second play where either Sam Houston comes up for like a huge defensive stop, or they kick like a last second field goal, which also came true.
He called like the entire game. It was awesome. Like watching it and going back and watching it and being like, yeah, he mentioned all of these players.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun. But yeah, I mean, like, Ezzard kind of killed him. He had the touchdown catch, obviously, where he put Wayne Davis in some sort of blender and washing machine combo.
Hello.
Hello. Did I cut out?
No, my mic wasn't working for a second.
No, but he had that play where he just spun Wayne Davis in circles.
And that was what you do in Madden. Like, literally when you're playing your friend in Madden, and that was embarrassing.
I mean, as a Lions fan, I've seen that quite a bit from DBs. So that was not an unfamiliar sight. But Davis is a good player. I think that shows you that Ezzard's got some moves. The punt, there was one block, you can go back and see it on the replay, where someone, I think it might have been Wells, to be honest with you. I think he was on special teams. I could be wrong. Got just blown up in the middle of the field, like shoved like 10 yards out of the way. So Ezra made one guy miss, and then he had this huge hole in the middle where the guy in coverage would have been. He obviously takes it to the house. And the other one is, like, I think Van Horst is getting a little bit too much heat for the kickoff. Like, it bounces, and he tries to snag it, like, in the air, and he didn't. Like, goes off his hands, and then it's recovered. But people have given him a little bit of a hard time for that. I don't know if that's really too much on him. Then they go and easily score with, like, the rushing touchdown from the quarterback. I will say Wells got jammed like crazy on that interception. Like, he's running like a curl route, and the corner just ate him up. So when he comes out of the break and tips it, he pretty much got demolished by like a 6'4" corner who's a really good player for them, who then also made the interception on the tip. So the good play by Sam Houston. I know some people are saying it was kind of a fluky. I think it was a little bit in terms of the tip, but like, he also got kind of demolished on that route, even though he's a really good player. So like, Sam Houston made some plays, and they did most of the dynamic ones in a really condensed time, which made it seem awful, certainly. And like, JMU made some plays that were choky, but at the same time, Sam Houston at halftime was probably pretty pissed because they're not the kind of team that should have been down 21 points to JMU at halftime.
Yeah, and also at halftime, I mean, I fed into this. I was thinking, wow, JMU is dominating this game. This is absolutely insane. But now looking back on it, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, you're sitting there and you're thinking, well, the first quarter was kind of a wash. Like, they were fairly equal in the first quarter. And in the second quarter, they just put together a few drives and the defense had a few stands. And like, that's way oversimplifying what happened. But at the end of the day, JMU scored on three possessions that Sam Houston didn't. No, four possessions that Sam Houston didn't. And then Sam Houston in the third quarter scored on four possessions that JMU didn't. The only difference was that Sam Houston scored four touchdowns and JMU scored three touchdowns and a field goal. And then the fourth quarter, again, was practically a wash. So to kind of think that JMU choked this game away, which you could argue they did because they did have that lead. They were the first ones to go up. At the end of the day, JMU won a quarter, Sam Houston won a quarter, and the other two quarters were practically washes. And it came down, JMU lost by three, and the difference in that game was Sam Houston scoring a touchdown on their fourth possession and JMU kicking a field goal. Which was the right call, I will say that. JMU kicking the field goal when they did was the correct play call.
The Connor Madden one?
No. The one to open the game.
Gotcha. No, I mean, I thought they did a decent job throughout much of the game and obviously kind of had a meltdown where Sam Houston was also good. But to me, the story, at least from following along in group chats and Twitter, is the fan reaction to me was just absurd. What were your thoughts on the breakdown of, I guess, calling for Cignetti's job, among other things?
I think you had the perfect tweet. I think it's like 2 days after the game, and you just said, look, no matter what you say, you would not have coached JMU to a 21-3 record. And also, we say it every time, but it has to be said. His losses were against FBS West Virginia, which, because of his conservative nature, JMU was in late. It was a loss to North Dakota State, which, due to his conservative nature, they were in late. I mean, we can also talk about special teams being what cost them both of those games, and we'll probably talk about special teams mistakes next. And then this one was just a fluke game. That doesn't happen. Like, on a week to, if this was the third time they blew a 20-plus point lead, yeah, 100%. You can – don't at him, but you can call for his job. I mean, we were the leaders of the fire row train at one point because he just kept blowing these leads and we had seen enough. So, like, we're not sitting here on our high horse saying – you shouldn't call for coaches' jobs. Accountability is 100% a real thing, but not when the coach is 21-3, coached you within 3 points of your second national championship, got you within 2 yards of a national championship last season, and had a wash of a 2020 fall. Like, he is more successful of a coach than Mike Houston. He took a worse talented team. No offense to the spring 2021 team, but they were decimated by injuries. It's a weird spring 21 season. This was a worse team than any of the Houston teams. And one of the Houston teams went 9-4 with a second round exit to Colgate. Get out of here telling me that Cignetti needs to be fired. You want to go back to the Everett Withers 74-71? Like, also, this is this is something you said, and I agree with. In the moment, I didn't fully agree with, but now as I've looked back, the standard for JMU is not national championships every – it's not being a lock to be in the national championship game. It's to be a lead front runner contender, which is what they were this season. But that doesn't always mean you make it to the Natty.
So what was the main storyline of the Colgate game that was not DiNucci's five interceptions, in your opinion?
Mike Houston was distracted because he was going for other coaching gigs.
And he absolutely was.
Yeah. There was no.
This week before the game, Kurt Cignetti replied to a national reporter saying no when someone floated him as one of 10 potential candidates for the Buffalo job. Now, his offensive coordinator, Shane Montgomery, is leaving to be the offensive coordinator at Buffalo. But, like, you can't come here and talk about Houston and be like, oh, he wasn't focused, wasn't distracted. And then you have Cignetti coming out and just, like, not dunking on the national guy, but dunking on the storyline that he might be interested in leaving. That was sweet. And I thought that was really cool. And, like, he comes out and they've been really good. They're 21-3. I know they're not perfect, but the idea that they talk about play calling and then also blame Cignetti when Montgomery calls the plays is wild to me.
I do. I see, because I was talking about this with the Delaware game, the game right before it. I was blaming Rocco for the mistakes that were happening because it's the head coach. At the end of the day, it's the head coach that made the hire, that makes the decision. He has the headset on. He has final say. So I see why they're blaming Cignetti, but Cignetti,
yes,
the play calling wasn't bad to blame him.
That was kind of
the best postseason run of play calls I've ever seen from JMU.
The offense was good. They had like 430 yards and 35 points. To sit there and blame play calling when they threw like one kind of unfortunate interception that wasn't a result of a play call, and then they had major special teams errors, and people were like, "Huh, the play calling was too conservative." Like, they don't have a play in the book that they're looking at that Donnie Kirkpatrick left for them that is like muff a kickoff. Yeah. Like, they don't.
That's exactly what the sports blog guys were saying too. The offense is what built a 35-point lead. Right. They're the ones that did it. That play calling, the flea flicker that every single JMU fan was awing over in the moment is the same play calling that has scored them 35 points. And to piggyback on that, I will kind of segue into this quick little where we can place blame, because I feel like it's just cathartic to put blame somewhere.
Yes.
I brought it up. I think special teams is what is to blame. It's not the play calling. It's not the offense. It's not the defense. Both made mistakes. But at the end of the day, I think it was special teams. Granted, you can't really blame anyone, but Harry O'Kelly nails another guy in the helmet. Like, that's just unfortunate. Like, that's just wrong place, wrong time, everything. But that was just unfortunate. But, I mean, you look back, rewinding to 2019 fall, the West Virginia game was lost because of a few muffed kicks. I think it was one muffed kick and a couple fumbles. So, like, you can chalk that up to special teams. North Dakota State, it was a blown field goal coverage, and they took advantage, and they had the fake field goal for a touchdown. You can kind of chalk that up to that. And then this game, you can easily chalk it up to a punt return touchdown and a muffed kickoff. But something that I'm not seeing talked about enough, Bennett, you brought this up. Not only do they have that, but they also have on the special teams the highest scoring kicker in the history of JMU football and the CAA. So you got to take it all in. There are mistakes on return teams, but also at the same time, that special teams unit has accounted for a whole hell of a lot of points.
I think that's important. When people say special teams very broadly, I don't think it accurately reflects, like, how many teams would, like, die to have Ethan Ratke as their kicker, right? Like,
well, not even Ethan Ratke, the whole kickoff, the whole field goal unit, because they didn't allow a blocked field goal all season.
Right. They've been really good. And O'Kelly, for the most part, has been decent. Some of it, I think, is really just return. I think coverage, their stats were down in both punt coverage, like net punting was not great. And then you also look at the kickoff coverage was not good. And then in the return game, they were not dynamic really at all.
No, it was no offense to Jack Swarba, but I mean, he's no D'Angelo Amos. And right. I don't know if it was a culmination of him not being as dynamic as D'Angelo was, or if it was his unit wasn't blocking for him, but I swear every time it was a fair catch. Also, every time I held my breath because he did not catch those that cleanly.
I think some of it too could have been intentional given lack of depth and like COVID stuff that, like, why don't we just have the guy catch it and play offense instead of like maybe getting some dudes blown up and crushed. Because I also think like it's a spot that like Solomon Van Horst would make sense. You know what I mean? Like they have other guys. I think
he's on kickoff, so put him on punt too.
I think there's things that they can do to get more dynamic in both of those areas, which would really help. And then I think coverage, one of the things that no one really talked about is like Sam Kidd is like, I don't want to say a psychopath, but like he's so good on kick coverage. And I'm pretty sure he was out for most of, if not all, the spring with an injury. Like that's your number one kickoff coverage guy who's a stud and you lose him. I don't think that helps at all because he really was just dynamic. So there's some stuff that I think goes into the special teams too.
And I'll even float this by for the punt return touchdown. I don't think that was bad coverage by JMU. I think that was great play by Sam Houston. Like Wells was in his hole. He just got blown up by the Sam Houston guy, which like you shouldn't let that happen. But at the same time, you don't hardly ever see someone getting blown up like that over the middle to just phew, wide open the gap. Like they were clearly playing a directional punt that wasn't executed perfectly. And at the end of the day, that's what happened. But I mean, it is still a mistake and it still reflects on the punt return coverage team. But I don't think it's like they suck. They had they played the coverage and they just beat the coverage. No, Sam Houston blew up the coverage.
And I think it's also worth noting when we had Josh on to talk about Sam Houston, they were horrid against North Dakota State and special teams. I promise you that whole week of practice was special teams heavy. He had mentioned they would probably brought in better players, starting caliber players, and move them back kind of onto the special teams unit. It's a huge focus for Sam Houston. So for them to also have a really good special teams performance on the flip side kind of makes sense.
And it's also worth mentioning Casey Keeler's a good coach.
Such a good coach.
Like he is one of the best coaches in the FCS.
He has a PhD for a reason.
Exactly. It's just, yes, it had, like, they built the lead, but I just think that was they weren't 21 points better than Sam Houston and they let him off the hook. That's not what happened. It wasn't the Dennis Green post-game press conference.
Right.
It was a swing of momentum and both teams, and that's what just like me wrapping my head around that game. They both scored on four straight possessions while the other team stumbled. The other team stumbling in Sam Houston case was three and out interception. Like that's not going to happen an entire game. And then what happened on the flip side, they had four straight possessions where they scored and all four of theirs were touchdowns. And that's the difference. It was heartbreaking. It was annoying to watch because you saw it happening and it was kind of like being trapped in a nightmare. And it gave me flashbacks of the Elon basketball game where you just see it happening and you see them melting down and you're like, there's nothing that they can do right now. But yes. Cignetti should not be fired. This team should not be blown up. Here's a question. Even though in our text planning for this episode, you said you were going to float me all the questions and here's one for you. Going into next season, I don't expect an FBS transfer just because of the weirdness of playing in the spring. I don't know if Cole comes back. I don't know if Cole can play next season because of his broken – let's talk about that first. That last drive, they didn't put Gage in. Cole broke his thumb and required.
They put him in the national championship down two scores for a Wildcat package. Yeah.
They put him in Colgate after Ben threw five picks, and then they put Ben back in. But that's besides the point. They didn't put Gage in to, like, save the game. Also, I haven't really seen much talk about this. And they were like, Gage, that just couldn't happen. Gage is a – if Gage was the starter, I think Gage is a good quarterback. I think Gage might be one of the worst backups in the FCS for the pure reason that he is the exact opposite of what Cole is. Cole's a right-handed pocket passer. I'm pretty sure Gage is a left-handed scrambler.
It's just like –
like literally everything is different.
You could have lots of success going into a game and game planning with him and like a power package. Like he was really impressive in Elon when he came off the bench and did some things, but like he put him in an FCS semifinal with like down three on the road. Your team has collapsed.
Third and four on the verge of field goal range.
And you kind of got to throw. Yeah. It's like, it's not really an ideal spot for the guy.
You're starting left tackle and Liam Fernandel is out. Raymond Gillespie was literally hurt on that 2-point conversion as well as Cole. So your right tackle, I think Gillespie plays right tackle.
I think he's on the left.
Okay, so your whole left side is not what it was, and that's your prime, and that's where the. But with that being said, that was an injury. Cole broke his thumb. Cole was probably also concussed, if we're being honest. If you saw the hit,
that was the point conversion. That was the best part. Is like he gets crushed and is like wobbly to get up, and everyone's like his thumb is hurt, and I was like, okay, like his thumb.
But it also looked like he's on the sideline. I don't know if you saw this when you were watching the replay. They showed him on the sideline, like between a timeout, like between second and third or third and fourth. And it looks like he's trying to warm up to go back in, and his hand is completely just taped. Like his thumb is just pure tape. And he's trying to throw, and he goes over and walks to the sideline like he expects to go in. And the announcers are like, questioning.
Did he did go in for a little, didn't he? Didn't he go back in and then come out or something?
I don't think he ever – he broke it. I think he played a couple more. They called timeout or something.
And then they pulled him or something,
and then
right?
They pulled him.
It was just very odd. But, yeah, they pulled him because he was hurt, obviously. The other part that we should get to, Ethan Ratke could not have gotten the 51-yard kick into the wind to the uprights, which the coaches know better than we do. That's why Connor Madden – I will not sit here and say that that was an ideal situation for someone's first field goal attempt. But.
Yeah, that's very weird. I tweeted after it. I was like, it's interesting they put Connor Madden in that situation. Now knowing all the information, I understand why. But yeah, what a weird time to, for the first time all season, that's when you deploy that package. And so the fans are just very questioning of it. Here's a hot take. You ready for it?
I'm very much ready for this.
I would have rather gone for it on 4th and 6 there.
Wasn't it like 4th and 16 or something though?
No, it was 4th and 6.
I thought he got sacked and it was like 4th and very long.
It was like 4th and 3 on the 30 and then he got sacked. And
it was only
4th and 6 from the 35 or something like that.
Okay.
That's what I would have. I know Gage had taken what, 2 sacks straight up, like boom, boom. But
yeah, I mean, he wasn't really inspiring confidence.
My take is you call one time, you call your last time out there, you just talk it out in the huddle, and then you go out and see what happens. But I also understand why they kicked the field goal. I guess in their minds, Connor Madden.
It was just to fact check, I've got 4th and 16 from the 34.
Really? Okay. Yes. So I was
in the game notes.
I completely missed the one on broadcast, and I only saw the 6. I still would have
much shorter.
That's my hot take, though. The 4th and 6, 4th and 16, I still would have rather gone for it because I think it's a higher percentage of getting it on first down than making that kick, speaking from an analytical point of view.
It was – the kick was not really an ideal thing. It kind of goes a little bit back to the West Virginia game when they punted for no reason, but they ended up getting the ball back. But it was – anyway, there's definitely some questionable times there where it's like, you know what, like maybe just lobbing the ball up to Antoine Wells, who drew a pass interference 3 plays earlier, might be a play. So I certainly get that logic there, especially, I mean, the dude hadn't kicked a field goal all season. That's a whole lot of pressure from 51 into the wind.
Here's my thing. I think it's a 5% likelihood that they convert that on 4th and 16. I think it's like a 2% chance he hits that field goal. And
yeah,
I'd
and if you percentage. If you get the 4th and 16, you got a chance to punch it in and win or something. But I mean, obviously not a great situation either. You'd love him to not get sacked twice.
It's also crazy because I think they were playing to win. Like the reason they pass it on 3rd and 6, like the announcers were saying, why didn't they just run it up the gut and try to like get a couple of yards, place it where the kicker needs to be, and then kick for overtime? I don't think Cignetti and company were playing to tie there. I think he took the sack and then Cignetti kind of reverted back to the way he plays football, which is now we just got to take the points.
And they had given up 35 second half points. Yeah. So I like that logic of not being like, let's tie it up with 3 minutes left.
3 minutes.
Yeah. I don't know. People got all upset and like about everything. But I think the other thing is like the sports blog guys mentioned this on their podcast that like for Sam Houston, this is like a historic win they'll talk about forever. It was incredible. Like no one, when JMU fans came back to beat Appalachian State, they're like, wow, what an amazing team that we have. And when they came back against Weber State, when they had no business really erasing 11.3 minutes in the fourth quarter, they're like, wow, what an amazing team we have. And then when it happens to them, they're like, well, we suck. Like it's, I don't know. It just seems wrong.
Yeah. I like here. I'm reading over the outline just to see if we need to hit anything else. I'm glad you put Mike Houston and JMU nearly blew a 17-point lead back in 2016 at the Fargo Dome.
And another one to New Hampshire in the fourth quarter when they're up like 30 and they almost lose. They need an onside kick. They were really close a lot of times to squandering games, and they just pulled it out. And people think of him way different. Like Cignetti, what Cignetti needs to do is beat Morehead State 100-3 next fall, and people will be like, because then the offensive stats all season are going to look good, and they'll be like, Cignetti is a genius. We won a game. He just needs one massive blowout to be like, see, we don't take our foot off the gas.
It's funny that people also thought that JMU took their foot off the gas in that game and that the conservative play calling hurt them in the second half. They didn't have the opportunity to call plays during that 5-minute, 28-point run.
They're in the passenger seat of the car, and you're like, why is your foot off the gas? Like, come on. Awful.
Last point is the post-game press conference. Mike Green had the worst comment I've ever heard in my entire life. I don't know about
the worst.
What did he say, Bennett? What did he say?
All right. So I think some of it is you've got him right after the game, and they might just be saying things. But they did. I think this kind of checks out. He basically said that, like, the team at halftime was feeling really confident, and they thought that the opponent would kind of roll over in the second half. I think that's what he said. That they were going to roll over. So they were a little surprised when Sam Houston fought back, which I thought was moderately alarming. But I also, Cignetti kept saying, he said on the broadcast, he said it post game, that if they could have scored the first time they got the ball in the second half, he thought the game effectively would have been over. And I feel reasonably confident that might have been said in the locker room. And I think they might have kind of bought into that, where it's like one touchdown and they're going to quit. Was kind of the mindset, and then it didn't happen. They're like, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, we'll play these comments here.
His play today overall was really good. His play today overall was really good. What did you think of the way he performed? Three touchdowns, I think 261 yards.
So he played really well. You know, I'm a big fan. You know, he's improved every week. You know, he makes a lot of good plays. You know, he's been here a long time. You know, he's got his thumb now, and he's got some things to think about, whether he comes back or not. I hope he does, but you know, I'll respect his decision either way. And I thought he really just gave us really, really good quarterback play the last four or five games of the year.
I wanted to ask, you know, in that second quarter, what was the key to kind of, you know, stretching the Sam Houston defense? You know, they were stopping the run pretty effectively that first quarter. You guys were able to break some things open, which helped the pass.
A run, and then we threw a trick play at him, a reverse pass. And then we got the ball back and capitalized again with some things that maybe they hadn't seen, some throw and catch plays. And then, you know, they were down. You could see them, like they were losing their will. And boom, 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 we score at the end of the half. We're up three touchdowns. And if we could have just done anything with the ball the first time we got it on offense, you know, I think it would have been, you know, it would probably been over. But we didn't.
What were you saying, like, kind of late in that third quarter? Like, Coach Cignetti mentioned maybe that the heat was getting to guys a little bit. Like, do you think it was a little bit of fatigue later in the game? I know they also broke some plays open in space as well. Just what was maybe getting to the guys later at that point in the game?
Maybe it's some fatigue. I think we weren't really fully locked in. I think we thought they were just going to roll over. And, of course, clearly they didn't. They came back and poured it up, but that's it. We fought a tough game, but we gotta keep our foot on the gas.
Just really interesting things said by the team in the post-game press conference. Like, things you don't – yes, it's right out of the heat of the moment, right, blowing that lead, but – I don't know. That's just such a weird, like, Dennis Green in the heat of the moment. I think that was the head coach's name, the Cardinals, classic. We let him off the hook. They are who we thought they were. Like, that was his whole thing. It's like, we didn't undersell them. They just are that good. And then JMU's like, yeah, we undersold them. We got up 21 points and we were just like, ah, that's game.
I think if you're looking for anything to be worried about with JMU in terms of winning national championships in the future, it's that. I mean, I feel pretty confident from, like, some conversations with players or people close to the program that they 100% thought when they were playing Colgate that they were more athletic, better, and I think they thought they were going to kill them because I think they thought they were better athletes.
Yeah, I think there's a – I hate to project, and I'm not like – I don't know any of the players personally. I don't know what their daily thoughts are. But there are times where you – I mean, you kind of saw it against both Robert Morris and Elon. They – these players live on social media. I mean, we tweet about Percy, and an hour after the game, we're getting likes from the whole team on things we tweeted about them during the game. So they see what is being said. They're taking it in. So after a Morehead State blowout win, and everyone's like, this team's great again, Robert Morris, they look shaky. Elon, they look shaky. And then – I do think they feed off being the underdog because the only time they won a national championship was when they were the true underdogs. And then they dominated week first playoff game, second playoff game while they were the underdog. And then when they come into this, they were the underdog in the first half and then they get big headed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they kind of need that chip on their shoulder and like, look, like it's hard to not kind of read the headlines and see all those things.
It's not hard to buy into your own hype when literally all of the coaches are saying it in press conferences. Every fan is saying that you guys are the best team since X, Y, Z. I mean, we say it all the way. Back in 2018, we said, is this team the best JMU football team we've ever seen? And they proceeded to go 9-4 down the stretch.
And it's like hard to kind of break that mold. They're obviously not doing it intentionally. They're trying to stay as focused as you can. But especially after a first half like they had, where they played so well, I think they were like, yeah, like we're the better team. We can kind of stomp on them here early in the second half. And instead it obviously got crazy pretty quick. But I think that, yeah, it's something they need to maybe keep working on where they can stay locked in, find a way to get a chip. It's kind of like the Dabo Swinney, Nick Saban thing. Like Dabo Swinney just makes stuff up. The man is like, whoa, they voted a second in this poll. And he's just made up the poll or something. Like they do a lot of things to motivate themselves that are just basically lies at Clemson. And I'm not saying that he necessarily has to do that, but I guess you got to find ways because, like, going into next year, they are clearly more talented than everyone on the regular season schedule.
Yeah, and they won't have a even depending on who their quarterback is. If it's Gage, if Cole comes back, and if it's Cole, if it's Kyle Adams, if it's a random FBS transfer, who knows? Like, that's a question. Like, coming into this season, that was a question mark. It's a question mark again. And again, I think the team will only go as far as the arm of the quarterback next season will take them. And Cole's arm was good enough to take him to a national championship this season, post-pause. But we digress. Anything else you want to hit on football? We're about 30 minutes into this podcast. You want to talk about anything else with football?
Let's do a quick look to next season, look to the fall.
Okay, perfect. 3 months. Mark your calendars. Yeah. It's about 3 months until the next one. I think that lessened the sting for me a little bit with this loss. I was like, damn. And then I looked up and I said, oh, they kick off in August.
Yeah, it's going to be really soon that they're getting back into camp and getting things going. So that's not much of a – it's not nearly as hard as it normally is. I'm interested now, I guess, what your thoughts are on what needs to happen. I think this was a Twitter question, too. What needs to happen offensive coordinator-wise? Montgomery going to Buffalo. Do they need an internal guy because it's hard to implement a new system? Can you still go external?
That's a great question. I didn't think of that until I saw this question from, let me pull up who asked it. Duke, Chicago Duke, at Chicago Duke 1 asked this question. You know, I don't know how much Cignetti has his hands in this. Like, I don't know how much he's the one telling kind of the offensive coordinator, this is what we're going to do. But with all that being said, they have a couple really good coaches on the coaching staff that they can internally promote. I wouldn't be surprised if it's an internal promotion. And I think they're probably going to lean that way.
I think they might go external, but with someone who shares, like they're not going to bring in like an air raid guy. It's just fling the ball around. Like he wants someone, I think, like Montgomery, but I wouldn't be surprised if he brought someone in with offensive coordinator experience. I think that's kind of the thing that stands out. I don't know that they have that on staff. I think the guy would be like Robo, or I don't know how to actually pronounce his full last name, but the offensive line coach is really experienced, an assistant head coach. I don't think he's ever been a coordinator.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they have anyone else on staff who really makes sense other than him. Like, I think he's the most experienced guy outside of Montgomery that they have. I mean, you've got Montgomery's working with the quarterback. So normally you might think like a quarterback's coach, maybe he's really involved in the play calling, but Montgomery did boast of all of that. You've got Grant Kane, but he's also the special teams coordinator and tight ends.
And so, after Sam Houston State game, I don't think fans want to hear the name Grant Kane.
I also don't think he's an offensive, like, I just don't think that he's, I think they'll have him with special teams and focusing on improving that. He's probably not, they were pretty good in 2019 with him. He's getting some hate he doesn't deserve, but then they're pretty experienced. I mean, inexperienced. Like John Miller was more recently like a JMU player than a coach. You know what I mean? Like, he's a young dude. Like, we were in the same business classes. We graduated in 2018. Like, I think he's a really good future mind, but like for them to go for a 25-year-old as a coordinator would be kind of stunning. And then Mike Shanahan's the other one.
Mike Shanahan? You think he'd call up Kyle, get some plays real quick?
So he was, I guess he's been the what?
Head coach of the Denver Broncos and Washington football team. Yeah, great pedigree.
He's been with the receivers for a while and been with Cignetti for a good bit as well. So maybe he's an interesting name that comes up. My guess is that he would lean external for a guy who's got coordinator experience.
I think it also is a question of how much does Cignetti want to be involved with the offense? Like, if he wants to be heavily involved, he could probably promote the line coach or
right.
Mike Shanahan, and then he just has his hands all over it, like a la yeah. Andy Reid. So I say internal, you say external. I hope that answers your question, Chicago 2-1. We don't agree. So that's all for the football questions. Now, who's the quarterback? We talked about it. Who's the quarterback next season, week one? I think now we're in the prediction mode rather than like the speculative. So I want hard answers here.
I hope it's Cole. I think it'd be fun if it was Cole. I mean, obviously he's dealing with the thumb, so you might not be able to actually start practicing until like camp or something like that, which would be annoying. But you could still lift and things like that. They've got a little, I think his thumb will be decently okay in a little bit if he gets surgery and needs it. But my guess
he's
would
coming
be
coming back. Do you think he's coming back?
He apparently has not made up his mind. Kurt Cignetti said he wants him back, which would lead me to believe that he might be able to be persuaded, especially after the way he played. He was really good. So, I mean, I kind of hope he does. If not, I do think it would be Gage unless they bring in a transfer. No offense to the youngsters, Kyle Adams. And they've got another one. It's like Billy Atkins, I think, is an incoming freshman. But Gage, like, you can run a successful offense with Gage.
Yeah. You can win games with Gage.
100%. So I think it'll be Cole or Gage. I'm semi-interested to see if they attempt a transfer route, and you put in the outline way too early national championship pick, and I will mention why I think a transfer is interesting in that portion. But yeah, I mean, who do you think is the QB week one?
Yeah, I think Cole cemented his spot as the starter for next season based off of his post-pause run, which sucks for Gage because he was slight. Like, if that pause doesn't happen, who knows where we are today.
Yeah.
Which is actually, like, it's just so crazy to think about. But, yeah, it comes down. Will Cole come back? I think if Cignetti wants him back and he can – he is on a good rehab timeline for his thumb and
Cignetti – he just does, like, thumb wrestling with his buddies.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see if this works this week. And Cignetti, like, guarantees him the starting job. I think Cole comes back. Based off of what I saw, especially in the playoffs, especially North Dakota, especially the Sam Houston State game, I want Cole back. I know I was very in the Gage Maloney camp. I was very much in the Cole Johnson bench camp. I was very much wanting to start the next chapter midway through the season after Elon and Robert Morris. I don't know what had happened, though. Like, he became what we thought he was going to be. His deep ball, I think this is what happened. I think they started, instead of focusing on slants and out routes and quick timing routes, they focused more on Antoine Wells is a game changer. Let's open up the top of the defense because they're stacking the box. Let's not throw into the box. Let's throw outside of the box. And that's where Cole Johnson excels. He excels outside of the numbers. You don't really see a lot of quarterbacks excelling outside of the numbers. So I think once they figured that out post-pause, he became a great quarterback. So I would love to see Cole. I think if Cole comes back, they're the second favorite to get to the national championship behind North Dakota State.
There's also some like important, not that important, I guess, but like weather things that like kind of matter, like the way it'll happen next. If JMU's like a top two seed, they're playing in like cold Bridgeforth, where I think the running style and physical game that they like to play could be maybe more successful than it was in 85 degree Texas heat in May. So there's some stuff there that I think is interesting in terms of like cold weather, nasty weather, which they've had for some of these night playoff games where your quarterback doesn't need to be perfect. So I think next year, just like an efficient Cole Johnson would be really dangerous.
Yeah. And when Cole was bad, the running game was bad because they could put 10 guys in the box.
Yeah.
But you saw when North Dakota and VMI tried to put 10 guys in the box, they could just have that one-on-one coverage and just throw it deep.
I think he gained a lot of confidence. They look better, and yeah, I would be excited for them at it. And it sounds like you have North Dakota State as your early championship pick.
Yeah, let's move right into that. Yeah, I'll go first since I showed my hand. My way too early national championship pick. What I meant by this is, who do you have in the national championship next year? I mean, you can pick the winner. my way too early pick for that game is North Dakota State and JMU. I think behind Quincy Patterson coming from Virginia Tech to North Dakota State, the FBS transfer, I think he's going to ball out. I mean, North Dakota State with what, Zeb Noland and whoever their freshman quarterback
Cam
was.
Cam Miller, I think.
They weren't good. Like, it shows how important a QB is in the FCS game. They weren't good, and North Dakota State suffered, but I think North Dakota State will be right back into the best team by far in the league very soon. Also, it's worth mentioning, JMU – this is back to kind of the beginning of the expectations surrounding JMU. I was texting you this. North Dakota State is North Dakota State because of who they recruit against. Like, they're recruiting that whole area with barely any FBS competition, barely any other FCS competition. On the South Dakota State broadcast, they were like, FBS teams don't even step foot in South Dakota. So South Dakota State has first dibs on all of these great players. It's almost exactly the same with North Dakota State, except they battle a little bit with North Dakota. But they're not battling with FBS players, so of course they're going to have the best team in the FCS. Whereas JMU, what they have built, competing with Tech, UVA, ODU, Maryland, Towson, William & Mary, Richmond, you could even go up a little bit to Villanova, you could go down to UNC, maybe a little bit of Clemson. Like, that whole pipeline, that whole, like, three, fours, and probably not Clemson. They're not recruiting the same kids at all. But you know what I mean. Like, they're recruiting against team, like, other players, other schools. And so what JMU has been able to build with that in mind is very impressive. So I just wanted to get on that little soapbox.
Big time. I will say the talent pool in Virginia, I think, is probably deeper than whatever they've got in North Dakota.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, they were talking about one kid on the South Dakota State broadcast who had to play 9-man football or 7-man football in high school, which, yeah, I mean, the talent pool is so much deeper in Virginia. But just the fact that you can have any of your pick in North Dakota, and in Virginia, you have to try and get these three kids to
It's definitely a challenge for sure. And North Dakota's also done a nice job with other states in the Midwest. Like, I mean, they've been a more desirable place than Minnesota for a lot of years.
Yeah.
So they've done a heck of a job getting some. Trey Lance is a Minnesota kid, and Minnesota wanted him as a receiver. So, like, that's the kind of thing where they – good job in Minnesota.
Yeah.
To want him
as a receiver. Exactly. Let's push Trey Lance and think, if Minnesota just offered Trey Lance a QB spot, JMU would have won the 2019 National Championship.
What a shame. But, yeah, I kind of agree with your pick of North Dakota State, JMU. I think that makes sense. JMU's defensive line is the position I can't stop looking at, dude. They get like three dudes back.
Jalen Green, Isaac Uku, Mike Green's coming back. James Carpenter is going to grow into the role. The three other FBS transfers are going to grow into the role. Jesus, they're going to be good next season.
It's going to be unreal. And North Dakota State, Patterson, I was looking at him. He gives off like Bad Lee kind of vibes. Like, he's that kind of athlete.
How did we not get him? He was literally in our backyard.
That one's a tough blow because he's a Virginia Tech player, and it could have been a get. But he's going to be big for them. I don't think he'll have much trouble with that competition. He was not able to play in the spring due to – I think he played for Virginia Tech in the fall. Yeah, so he's a stud. I think he'll be their quarterback. I think everyone will get better. I mean, they weren't even that good, and they made the quarters. Also, you add in people back to the Fargo Dome. Like, they're probably going undefeated at home. They're probably getting a top, you know, whatever seed, which means they're having playoff games at home in the Fargo Dome, which is a massive advantage. So I think it's really hard to assume they won't be in Frisco.
Unless Quincy Patterson is a quarter of what we like, if he's a half of what we expect, there's winning that they're getting to the national championship. If he has to be really bad for them not to. I mean, you saw it this year. They almost got to the semis with a terrible quarterback. No offense to the kid. I don't mean to rag on him, but like based on, it also doesn't help you're being compared to Trey Lance.
No, but they took a pretty big step back. I mean, they struggled a lot, and then their offensive line wasn't as good as it normally was. Defensive line wasn't as dominant, and they're still right. I mean, Sam Houston needed a late game drive to just avoid that home upset. So,
yeah. Who's your way too early national championship pick?
I'll take North Dakota State to win. I just have a hard time.
North Dakota State to win all the way. Come on.
I think it's them and JMU. That's my pick, and I have a hard time saying that we should expect anything other than the team that wins it like 80% of the time in the last decade to win. they're the safe pick. But I think JMU, if Cole comes back, the roster's filthy. You just got to be able to get over that hump.
Yeah. Who's your pick for this Saturday in a couple of days? Who do you think's going to win?
Geez, that's a good question. I think South Dakota State's going to win. I think it could be a good game, but I still think South Dakota State's a little bit better.
All right. I'm on the Sam Houston train.
Really? I think it'd be fun if Sam Houston won, and then we could do this stupid – tweets that everyone does where it's like the Southland hasn't lost a playoff game. It's like, I wonder why. Are they actually the best conference?
I mean,
my God.
I heard the FCS Fans Nation podcast talking about it and a lot of just FCS voices on Twitter kind of like talking about how the CAA was all high. Like first week that everyone was like Missouri Valley is overrated. Because it's great because they have five teams right. And blah, blah, blah. Then the next week they're overrated. Then the next week they're great. Then the next week they're overrated. I don't know.
I mean, you still got – it's like the best teams – like I don't know how much you can take from some of the conference stuff, right? Because South Dakota State's number one seed and they're really good. Sam Houston's a two. JMU's a three. It's like I think you've got balance across conferences that was hard to see without a lot of non-conference stuff. But like the CAA is good. Missouri Valley is good. And the Southland has one really good team.
Here's how I'll break it down. Last thing about the playoffs, and we'll move into softball. Missouri Valley is not five teams in the playoffs this year good. The CAA is a lot better than two teams in the playoffs good. Southland is one team in the playoffs good.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Awesome. Well, this has been the JMU. No. Into what you want to talk about. You've been our pre-podcast talk, you were literally like, this is the reason why JMU, very nerdy talking about everything softball. Hit me.
I've been grinding on the softball stuff. Well, the softball stuff is interesting because I don't think anyone would actually debate that JMU is the best team in the conference. But RPI wise, they are not. Delaware has a better RPI. I think they're 27 and JMU's 35. So they're playing Delaware right now. Don't want to jinx it, but, you know, they may or may not have any hits through four innings. So, Odyssey's got something good going.
But, wait, they have what?
So, you got a no-hitter through four, struck out 10. One walk, so no perfect game, but pretty good.
I bet Jamie's run support's only one right now.
They kind of do that sometimes where they, like, don't hit a ton, then they add, like, a little insurance in the sixth or something. It's weird. But hopefully they can get it done. They're up 1-0 right now. Delaware, well, here's the thing. It's like the softball committee sucks. Like they're the worst. So like if they first of all, you want to win the tournament so you get the automatic bid so you don't have to worry about the committee doing something outlandish and like barely putting you in. So that's something you want first. But then like their RPI is 35 because they've played a horrendous schedule. Their best win is against George Washington, which is like 38th in the RPI. That's like their only, and then Charlotte 60th, which they beat to end the season. So they've got one top 50 win and two top 60 wins. So I've seen some stuff about like, you know, JMU can hold its own and go to a super and I'll take them against anyone. We're not taking them against anyone, right? Because they haven't played anyone. So we don't know that much. We know they're really good. We know these players have had success before.
We know they're really good against CAA competition.
Yes. But I mean, like this is pretty much the same roster that's like had beaten Power Five teams before.
That's true.
Like even last year when they canceled it, when they had Odyssey on the mound, they were holding their own against like top 25 teams, which I think they can still do, which is why they're in the top 25. But there's a difference between like D1 softball. I saw I had them, you know, as a 2 seed in the Los Angeles regional when they'd have to play like top seeded UCLA in the regional, not the super regional. And Rachel Garcia still exists. So that would be horrible.
In her 15th year at UCLA.
Exactly. So what you got to root for is you kind of got to root for them to play Delaware, which is happening, and you want to beat them. Ideally, you'd play Delaware twice. You'd have Delaware would keep winning after this and get back to play JMU in the convoluted format that is the CAA softball bracket. You could beat them twice, which would give you 2 top 30 wins. They're going to have, I think it was Drexel beat whoever. So Drexel's a top 50 team.
Drexel dominated Elon. Yeah. I think it was 9-0 final.
Yeah. So Drexel's top 50, and so is Hofstra. Hofstra lost to Delaware, so maybe you'll play them at some point. But if you could go 3-0, you get the automatic berth, you get 3 top 50 RPI wins, that would be, you know, tripling the amount of top 50 wins they had coming into the event. So that would help. Probably not hosting a regional. That would take some sort of miracle. And the committee hates them usually, even when they have good wins. So don't see that happening. But you're ideally, you could play someone in the 7-10 seed range in a regional, you upset them, and then you would have a chance in a super against a 7 or 10. That's the best way to make the Women's College World Series, right? If you play like a 15 seed, you could get through like they did against Michigan, and then you're going to have to play someone else, and you're going to get absolutely annihilated. Does she have more strikeouts now?
God, Odyssey's so good. It was a bunt. She was trying to bunt her way to first, and it just went at Odyssey, and she came off the mound perfect out of the circle and snagged it. She had 2 putouts in that inning. That's insane. She's really so good.
I think Sunday night at like 9, I think, is the selection show.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out for that.
So first question I have for you about softball.
Oh, yes.
This one is from Roger Smith, 13, on Twitter. Will this be a more balanced CAA tournament with 4 teams in the top 50 RPI rankings? And Elon, the only team, which is so weird, Elon, the only team to defeat JMU this season, where this is wide open as to who wins the title, or is JMU far and above the other teams?
JMU should be the favorite, but I don't think JMU's ever – well, that's not really true. But JMU's not totally far and above. I mean, they hosted a regional in 2015 without winning the conference title. Like, there are other teams in the conference that could beat them. And the fact that you only have to lose 2 games in, like, you know, a day or – she's so good. In another day or two, like, you know, it's pretty easy to get knocked out of this tournament if like 1 or 2 things go wrong. So it's somewhat wide open just because the format is like very quick and insane, and it's softball, and you've got 4 teams that are pretty darn respectable in the top 50. So it's a wide open field. I would still say JMU is significantly the favorite, and they're the best team in the event, but no gimmies.
Yeah. Awesome. So what do you want to hit next with softball? I feel like there was a lot we were talking about before the podcast that you wanted to get into.
I'm also kind of sad that like this is what happened with the schedule, where they weren't able to play tough games, because I do think it's going to be, I mean, they haven't played a good team, which is mean, but like they haven't really played like a seed caliber team since last spring. Like at the beginning of the spring.
The top 25. Yeah. Those invitations.
It's very hard to just like simulate that and get into that. And I mean, they're practicing against Odyssey, which helps when she's healthy, and like Alyssa Humphrey and all that good stuff. But it's really hard to go on the road and win softball games in this format against really good teams when you haven't played that many really good teams. So it's just going to be hard for them, even though they're really good. So that's what's frustrating, is like they might not get out of a regional. I think people have set themselves up to think they could like really contend in a super regional, and like if they get out of a regional, I think that'd be really great.
Yeah. If they kind of do what they did against Michigan mm-hmm. in 2019, I think that's a great, great season. Yeah, they've been impressive all year though. They've been darn. I mean, they've swept the floor with CAA competition.
They've just been unbelievably good. Like, and with Odyssey out for most of it, and she's the CAA pitcher of the year.
And Alyssa Humphrey picking up the slack. Alexis Bermudez, too, when mm-hmm. Odyssey was out, was a great second option. She hasn't played, I think, since April 25th. So she's kind of been pushed out of the rotation. But Alyssa Humphrey has picked up the slap phenomenally. What isn't said enough about Odyssey that I think needs to be brought up every time you talk about her as an elite pitching talent is she's an elite hitting talent too.
It's, I don't want to say it's unfortunate, but it's like almost unfortunate that she has come like on top of Megan Good and then not had her own separate era. Cause like, she's one of the best JMU athletes we've seen since we started paying attention to JMU sports.
Yeah.
She's,
I mean,
so good.
She was the player when Megan was out for that season and she dominated. And then when Megan grabbed, and then she was the best. She was pitcher of the year, I think, when Megan was also a pitcher.
Kate Gordon, home run.
Stop. Oh my God. You can't pitch her high in the zone like that. That's two on the day.
She's so, that's the thing about them that when they will make it in is dangerous, is that they've got a lot of players who can hit. Didn't even look up at the fence. They're kind of did, but like, they're so good. And Odyssey's really good that they can pretty much lean on her a lot. And then they've got Alyssa Humphrey too, with a really good lineup. So there's some excitement there. It just sucks that they didn't get to play much and that the committee is so Power Five biased that they have like no chance of hosting a regional. Cause it's really, I mean, the Hill right now, right? The Hill during this game, there's a bunch of fans out there because they're not really allowed in the stadium.
Maybe we should go to the Hill tomorrow.
11 a.m.
I'll drive down. I'll hit it after the podcast.
I'd be there if you're there.
I should have planned it better. But what I was saying with Odyssey is, like, I think it's just crazy. Not even the fact that she deserves her own era because she's so great, but it's just also insane that they went from Jalen Ford into Megan Good seamlessly, and then they went from Megan Good into Odyssey Alexander seamlessly. And that's CAA pitcher of the year to CAA pitcher of the year to top 10 pitchers in the nation, top 10 pitcher in the nation to top 10 pitcher in the nation. Odyssey Alexander's ERA right now is like 0.76. She's 10-0. She has over 100 strikeouts, less than 20 walks. Just insane the domination she's had this season. And Alyssa Humphrey, to pair it with, is like Peyton Buresh again, another freshman who looks like they're able to kind of take the reins from Odyssey. Not saying they will live up to what Odyssey has done, but it's just insane. And I mean, it's Rachel Garcia-esque. Rachel Garcia is a great hitter. She's one of the best pitchers in the nation and one of the best batters. And it's just crazy. I don't know if that was a ramble, but
it's good to see what they've been able to do. And obviously some of it's a little aided by the competition, but like, she's legit, you know, she's been really good.
If you're great playing against mediocre competition, no offense to the CAA, but kind of offense to the CAA. If you're great playing against mediocre competition, this is the results you get, a sub one ERA.
Yeah. And I mean, you've seen her battle pretty darn well against the Power Five schools too. And like, Kate Gordon hits against them. So like, they've got legit players. And I think Alyssa Humphrey, that's why I'm so interested. She's a redshirt freshman. Like, we don't really know what she can do when she plays against P5 players. So we'll see what comes of that, but they're legit. They've got Odyssey Alexander healthy, which is awesome. Sarah Jubas is hitting a smooth 417, and she hit a home run, I believe. So they're up 3-0 with three solo home runs. That's the thing that they do too, is they hit a ton of home runs, which is helpful in a tournament setting.
I wish they had players on base.
They do this a lot where they're just ripping solo shots, but I'm excited to see what the future holds. I think, you know, the committee, barring a disaster, and I think after this win, it'll kind of clinch it up that they're making the field, which was my only concern. But winning the first game's huge, because then you can get into the next one where even if you lose again, you don't have to go through quite as much of the hassle. And Delaware, RPI-wise, is the best team they'll go against. I think Drexel's a pretty darn good team, though. So that'll be a fight in the morning. And kind of interested to see, because that's fewer than 24 hours. Do you roll Odyssey again? Do you go Alyssa? And they could go either way with that. But
it's also tough because normally you've played these teams before.
Yeah.
And they haven't played the North. So
yeah, that was my other thing that I wanted to get in on softball. It's like the one season that the CAA softball doesn't stink. The three other good teams are in the North, and they haven't played them because of COVID. So that's killing their RPI. Like, I mean, JMU national polls have them at 22, and the national polls normally disrespect them, and the RPI has got them at 35. Like, that's just not reflect. Like, they're not the 35th best team in the country.
Yeah, but it's because they've played the 200th best team in the country 15 times.
Right. And their local opponent, they got UVA. They weren't able to play Tech. UVA was really struggled this year. And, you know, their RPI is not very good. And then they were going to play two more games against GW on a doubleheader. And GW is the team they beat once that has the RPI of 38. Would have been great wins for them. And it just poured rain on like a Wednesday and they never rescheduled. So they've taken some tough breaks.
Anything else you want to hit with softball?
I think that's mostly it, but I'm pretty amped because like softball is super competitive.
Yeah, Bennett is probably the biggest softball fan I've ever met. All he talks about during softball season is during diamond season, I should say. So baseball, softball. He's hyper focused on softball, knows the ins and outs of it. Didn't you get your like first taste of covering Breeze sports like at the Super Regional and it just made you fall in love with the game?
Yeah, basically that was my first like beat. I did like some occasional field hockey stuff, but then they put me on the softball beat and I was like, all right, we'll see how this goes. And then I was like, wait a second, they got this freshman who's the freshman of the year, Megan Good, and Jalen Ford's good and they're ranked. I was like, what do you mean they're ranked? And then I like actually got to the games and I was like, oh my God, it's 7 innings and 2 hours in action packed. And then you like go watch the baseball team and they lose like 14-2 over a 4.5 hour span and like in front of 3 people. I was like, I like the other one.
Yeah, like softball takes everything that's really, really, really fun of baseball, which
exactly
is great pitching, great hitting, and quick paced. And then they're like, let's just do that in a quicker game. And then if the other team is dominating, we'll just end the game.
For an example, this game right now is in the 5th inning. It's taken 1 hour and 20 minutes. It's a 7-inning game. One of the pitchers has a no-hitter, and the 3 runs have been scored on home runs. Like, like that's awesome.
Okay, so moving to other awesome things, lacrosse. They pulled John Hopkins in their draw after an amazing, amazing CAA championship win. I think they were down 12-9 to Hofstra in the final minutes. And it looked like Hofstra was going to win. And then they rattled off 3 goals to tie, sent it to OT. They scored the final 4 goals to win the CAA championship. Absolutely amazing. Their reward is John Hopkins, a traditional powerhouse in lacrosse. Very similar in seeding. And then their reward, if they beat them, the number one team in the nation, who's been by far the best team in UNC, who they lost 15-5 and did not look that competitive in earlier in the season. But I think first we need to talk about the CAA championship. What an amazing win.
Well, another thing too, is like at least I have kind of ragged on the CAA a lot for not having competitive teams outside of JMU. They got 4 in the tournament.
4 teams in the CAA in the NCAA tournament. How did that happen?
And then they've got the softball with 4 top 50 RPIs. I was like, wow, look at you. You're holding your own. But no, I mean, like Drexel's a top 10 team, I think, according to the polls. And Hofstra was a top 25 team. So they got a couple of huge tournaments.
Was it Drexel in the CAA championship?
Yes. Yeah, Drexel in the championship. But Hofstra was the game before. I think so. But they played them both in the tournament. So.
Okay. So Drexel was the CAA championship.
Drexel was the championship. Yeah, yeah. But both teams are super good, and like they've gone up. Like Elon, did Elon get in? Who was the 4th? No, it was Towson, probably, right? Hofstra, Drexel, Towson, JMU.
I think so.
It was Towson's ranked. So Elon was competitive, and they actually beat JMU. I think that was their only conference loss. They didn't even get in. So a much better year, and they've got the game Friday at 5 against Johns Hopkins, which is obviously super exciting. But yeah, I mean, I think the goal was right, get that one, and then.
What happens?
UNC is gross.
Yeah, UNC is filthy, filthy good. But see what happens. See what? No one thought they were winning a national championship when they did a few years back. So just go out there and play. See what happens.
I will say, I think they might have beaten I think they beat number one North Carolina the year they did win that.
Yeah, they did. They did. Yep. I think they only lost 1 game that season.
It was like a Maryland team that was filled. I mean, but they're good. And the fact that they rallied as much as they did at the end of the season and they won, 6 in a row to end the year? 3 against ranked CAA teams? Like,
And they've had if I'm not mistaken, I think they've had a couple players come back from injury. Molly Daugherty there was it's not every day she allows 15 goals, even if it is the top seeded team in the nation.
Right.
So I think she's kind of regained her form, her confidence. And then they've brought back these key contributors to the team. I'm not saying this is a national championship team. I'm not saying this is making it past the second round team. I think it's a team that enjoy every minute that they have remaining in their season, because they're a team that deserves the recognition, deserves the love, and deserves your eyeballs watching them.
I think another thing that's really interesting to me is, like, the first time they played Hofstra, they lost 13-7. Then they get them in the semis and they beat them 14-7.
They also lost to Elon earlier in the season, like another terrible loss. There was a weird point in that middle point of their season where they were dropping head scratchers, or they were losing to Hofstras by large margins, where you were left kind of questioning what was happening. Now today, I think they figured out the recipe. I think they were putting a little bit too much salt, not enough sugar. I think they finally figured out that salt to sugar ratio.
I think from a fan's perspective,
that was a great analogy.
I love that. That was great. from a fan's perspective, and maybe this is just like watching too much sports, but I think it would be fun to watch them obviously win the first round, but then even just see how they do compared to the first game against North Carolina. Like, maybe they don't win, but like, is it better than a 10-goal loss? Like, let's see where the program's going. Cause I still have confidence that Shelly Glazebacum could get them to a point again where they make Final Four runs. I don't think they're that far off.
No, not at all. I mean, that team that won that was not an expected Final Four run team, except probably outside of the immediate team circle. Like, national media, the national lacrosse media did not expect that. Going up against Boston College in that game, I don't think there was much. They were the upstart, like, plucky underdogs.
Yeah, and they were just really good and kind of kept surprising everyone with, like, oh, wow, they're this good.
Oh, wow. Well, was that a foul ball?
Did she give up a hit?
It's 5-0.
Oh, they're still. Who hit a home run? Did someone hit another home run?
They might have. Yeah, no.
Single. It was a Lindsay Meeks two-run single. 5-0. So JMU softball is picking up a dub. They're not. Odyssey's not giving up 6 runs. She might not give up 6 hits or any hits.
Remember that one weekend she had more hits herself than she had allowed hits?
Just absurd. She's been so good.
Moving in from lacrosse then. When is the John Hopkins game?
Friday at 5. You can watch it on ESPN3, so not Flow, because it's like a tournament game.
Perfect. Unlike the CAA tournament, which you have to watch on Flow.
Allie Barefoot's a star, though. Kurt Dudley, Allie Barefoot is a great duo.
That's a duo. I'm kind of sad we're talking over it.
I know.
Moving to women's golf, take it away, Bennett. You are the highest of the highs on this team. We might have to have the head coach or a golfer on the podcast to talk, because you love this team.
Okay, so they have 5. I've been following all the college golf because UVA also is in the regional, but they didn't advance. But it's fun to follow and talk to these teams because golf is just cool. But so they were in the Louisville regional and they were seeded 17th. They ended up finishing 16th out of the 18 teams. So on paper, maybe not the best showing you've ever seen. It's a 3-round event. And in the second round, they shot a team score of 291, which I have to figure out exactly how many over that was. Let me do my quick math here. They have it as this 3 over as a team. So they were 3 over as a team, which is pretty darn good. So they were only 3 over. They're 39 over for the week. So obviously that Friday, that's not right because it's not a Friday, but it was the second round for them was really good, which I guess was a Tuesday. So Monday through Wednesday. I was thinking of like normal golf tournaments from round 2. But no, their Tuesday round, they were 3 over, which was – it tied the team, Florida State, that ended up winning the regional. And Florida State is number 8 nationally. So that's an incredible round. They were better than UCLA, which is a top 25 team, Auburn, which is a top 10 team, better than Tennessee.
This is their second round, right?
Yeah, which is a top 40 team. So obviously, overall, in the course of the week, those teams outplayed them. But to have 5 players on your team, you count 4 of the scores, all 5 are underclassmen, and to have one day on the same course and to beat like 2 top 10 teams is unbelievable. So I think the future is really bright, especially when you compare them to, you know, conference foes and some tournaments that won't have fields like that. I think the future is really bright, especially, you know, 2 years from now when you think about the potential growth they could have.
Yeah. I'm excited to talk to
Crazy.
Them. Well, I'm excited to see you talk to them, because if they come on the podcast, it's all 3 of us. I don't think I'd be doing much talking.
Well, hopefully we get them on the pod. They can straighten out those drives.
Is that what Is that they're a little everywhere?
For you.
Oh, for me, yeah. Hey, I'm 300 straight right off the tee. All I gotta say, if I could straighten that up, I'm the next Bryson DeChambeau.
I will say college golf is moderately frustrating at this level because there's no, it's just the scorecard that they update.
Okay.
So you can't even get like an idea of like where they're hitting the ball unless you're there, which is, it would be cool if they had.
Well, if we could talk to the coach, we can figure it all out.
They probably got a little data. That's a good point. And the other thing I forgot to put in the outline, women's tennis, I guess, finished their season over the weekend. They lost to Tennessee in Charlottesville, but hell of a year for them.
What a year. Two CAA championships in Coach Shelley's first 2 years. Just absolutely amazing. Has built that program into the top program in the CAA, and with plenty of young talent. I think only one senior this year in Jonah Rocha. Plenty of talent returning. Oh my God,
they've got some really young talent.
Yeah. So much like the women's.
Let's do last question for you. Let's run through the sports and let's see next year. Quick look ahead. How many CAA titles are realistic?
Here we go.
Everyone. All right. Here we Football. Go. Make your tally. Well, we got to start. I'm doing alphabetical. I've got the page up.
Okay. Go.
Baseball. Yes or no?
No.
Basketball.
Unless they fire their coach and they bring in someone new, then maybe.
I don't think baseball's good.
No, because there's actually really good. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Next.
We're taking them out. Basketball. Men's.
No.
You said no.
Regular season or tournament?
I'll say either. You don't think men's basketball next year can win the conference title? Now we're in a take I didn't expect.
I think they can win the tournament. I don't think they can win the regular.
Wow. Who do you like over them? You just don't think they'll do it.
I think Hofstra, Northeastern. Northeastern got a really good transfer that I think Northeastern is formidable.
This is disappointing to hear.
That's it. I think
they're going to have a packed Atlantic Union Bank Center.
Yeah.
They might not lose.
They also don't have a Matt Lewis anymore. We'll talk about this in another podcast. All
right. You'll put it as a yes or a no.
I say yes to the tournament, no to the regular season.
Okay.
Football. Women's basketball, yes, yes.
Okay, women's basketball, yes. Football.
Yes.
Men's golf.
No.
Men's soccer.
Yes.
Men's tennis.
No.
No. Okay, women's basketball, you already said yes. Cross country, probably not, right? I don't know where they –
I'm going to say yes. They won one.
They won it this year, didn't they?
Pretty sure they won a couple.
I think they did win it. I always forget how good they are because they are not able to be viewed. Field hockey.
Yes.
Sneaky yes.
That's a sneaky yes.
Women's golf.
Yes.
Yes. Lacrosse.
Yes.
Women's soccer.
No.
Probably not, yeah. Softball.
Yes.
Swim and dive.
Yeah, of course. They win it every year. They're monsters.
Women's tennis.
Yes. Three
track and, maybe. Track and field.
Sure.
I have no idea how that.
I'm going to say no, though. I don't want to just say sure. I'm going to say no. If it's a sure, then it's a no.
Volleyball.
No.
How many is that?
You weren't keeping count.
Yeah, I thought you were, you were telling. Hold on. Let me go through. One, two, three.
This is great podcasting. Podcasting 101. Tally after you run the poll, and then
I thought you were you had your loud. Fingers up in the first part of this.
Not quietly. This is a terrible pod. We're nine. An hour. We're at an over an hour.
I thought mark. You were gonna fill the. I thought you were gonna fill the time. 10. All right, we're saying 10. I think volleyball is gonna win it, so I'll say 11. But I think anywhere. I think like 7 would be realistic, right? Where not everyone gets it done.
Yeah.
Like 7 to 11. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Yeah.
How many national championships?
None.
Men's basketball, women's basketball, football.
Volleyball, softball. Lacrosse, softball.
We might win the Natty in 10 sports next year. Can you imagine? Hey, AAC, keep an eye on us. We just won 10 Natties.
Hey, Delaware. This is going to be my last point, and then we'll wrap up the podcast. Hey, Delaware, stop bunting to try and break up.
Are they bunting?
Yes.
That's trash. That is, I would, if I'm Odyssey, you've already lost the.
Perfect game, hit them.
I'm hitting someone. I'm going right to the noggin. I'm sending a message. That she's got, last update. She got 13 straight. Oh my God. She's going to throw a no hitter with 15 Ks.
So, with that being said, for Bennett Conlon, my name's Jack Fitzpatrick. Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's podcast. We can't wait to come at you next week with even more great content. Maybe I'll dive into a little bit about my men's basketball bold prediction.
Yeah, what the heck? We should go through that roster next week.
Yeah, we'll go through that. We'll do some stuff next week. We'll keep the content train rolling. As long as there's sports being played, we will come to you guys every week. So check us out on Twitter at JMU Sports News. Let us know how you like the podcast there. You can also email us, jmusportsnews@gmail.com. Check us out at our home on the web, www.14strikeouts. What was that?
6 innings, 14 strikeouts, no hits.
Wow. So.
So she only needs 3 more outs for a no-hitter.
www.jmusportsnews.com. And you can find us on Facebook as well. So, see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.